At this time, we will have our missionaries or our mission team from the Christmas shoebox distribution. And I think, Mary, are you in charge? Partly? Okay, I'll let the team come on up, and then they will take over.
Since I'm first, they don't know they don't get a turn. While we were in Dallas, I purchased the book called Operation Christmas Child, written by Franklin Graham. And I would just like to give you a little bit of history on how it all got started. It was 1993, and the war was going on in Bosnia. And Franklin had made three trips to Bosnia because, of course, Samaritan's Purse was involved with medical supplies, with food, with, you know, just plain disaster relief. And he had just come back, and it was July. And he receives a call from a young man in England by the name of David Cook. And David said, "I've just come back from Bosnia, and I would like to take shoeboxes with presents in them for the children in Bosnia that are in this war-torn area." He said, "And I thought maybe you could help me out." And Franklin said, "Sure, we'll be glad to help you out, you know." And he says, "I'm thinking Christmas time's a-coming, but it's a long way off." And a few days before Thanksgiving, he received a call from David Cook and said, "Well, how have you done on getting these boxes?" And he said, "Oh, we're working on it." He said he'd totally forgotten. And so he sent his secretary out real quick to, they talked about what they would put into boxes, and he sent his secretary out to get some so he could present it at his church, Franklin's church, where he attends. And he called then Ross Rhodes, who was a board member, and he's also was the senior pastor of Calvary Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he said, "Send your wife out, have her buy stuff to fit in a box for a girl, for a boy, just in a shoebox, and show it to your people and see if they'll respond." So he did that. And Franklin said he totally put it off out of his mind. He didn't even think any more about it. Oh, he did tell him that he did say, put toys in it for a boy or a girl, toothpaste, toothbrush, hairbrush, socks, anything like that. Then he called his director in Canada and said what was happening, and so that they could start working on that too. And just a few days then, this was before Thanksgiving, he had called the pastor down in Charlotte. A few days after Thanksgiving, the pastor calls and says, "You better send somebody down to get these boxes." He said, "Oh, good, you got a few hundred of them?" And he said, "Yes," he said, "they're in the gymnasium, they're in the foyer, and they're in Sunday school classrooms." He said, "We have 11,000. And so Franklin then was just really taken back over this. They organized there at that church so that they could, one Sunday, they went through all of those boxes to make sure they were what was in them was appropriate. And of course, that's what we went to Dallas to do, was to see what was in those boxes was appropriate to send to war-torn countries and to young children. And the pastor said that one of the men in his church worked for the Bible Broadcast Network, and he interviewed him after that Sunday morning. And he said the boxes started coming in from people that had heard him on the television. And he said they came UPS, they came with people brought them by, they came the post, you know, with the post office and so on. And this is how they arrived, and that very first year there were 28,000 boxes that went to Bosnia from Canada and the United States. And he said, "When I look back over this," he said, "I think of Numbers 23:23. Oh, what God has done. And, you know, last year, being 13, and that was when the book was written, was the 20th year. And I have done boxes for several years. I did them in Alaska. We knew they were going to Siberia. So then you kind of put stuff in, you know, that's a little, that's appropriate for that area. But one of the things I was always concerned about was the money that you put in them. Did it really get taken out? What happened to this money? I can tell you, when you have people like Mary and myself, it gets taken out of the box. Fill your box, put your money right on the very top, and then snap your lid down. And we took the money out. And one of the cartons that were full, okay, after we'd gone through I don't know how many of those boxes out of the cartons, here was a package about so big, and it was about an inch high. And I went like that, and I said, that's money. I have no idea how much was in it, but it was like so thick, and I tore it just a little bit on the corner to see for sure that it really was money, and I dropped it in where we were supposed to put the money that came out of the boxes. You don't have to worry about your money not getting where it needs to go. There are policemen there with their guns, the whole bit. I mean, it is very secure situation. And I also want to mention that the real lack is for the 2 to 4 year olds and the 10 to 14 year olds. You know, that middle section's real easy to fill those boxes for. You got to think a little bit more. So as you think and pray about what the Lord wants you to do this next year, think about those particular age groups. One of the boxes I opened up, pulled out a hammer. Whoever would have thought of sending a hammer? We were doing things for Peru. Who would have sent a hammer to Peru? There had to be a reason. It'd be interesting to know the story that goes with that hammer. And one box I opened up, and that was the only box that had a pair of tennis shoes. There obviously was a child that was in need of tennis shoes. And I can tell you that going down there to Dallas changes your perspective on the shoe boxes. There have been so many people that have come to know the Lord because of the things that you stick in a shoe box and you send. Just pray over your shoe box. What does God want you to put in your shoe box? Danae, our granddaughter, came down from Alaska and went with us down there. And, of course, it was a great experience for teenagers. And her mother thanked me at least 3 times for giving her the opportunity to go. We got back on a Saturday. We were in Walmart on Sunday. And a friend was there, and she started in. She's, you need a box this big, and you need this, and you need this, and you need this. And she's filling up this friend of ours' boxes for November of 15. And she said, it's addictive. And that is really the truth. The shoes reminded me of a story that I had read in the book, and I want to just briefly tell you this story. This little girl, this was the very first year, it was 1993, and her name was Lila. I'm not quite sure if I'm pronouncing it correct, but she will not know, and God will forgive me. She was born to impoverished parents, and she was 12 years old. Lila's mother had awakened her and had dressed her that morning for school, and she had old shoes. The shoes were ripped open. The mother had tried to put stuff into the shoes, and the father had tried to use wire to put them together with so they would hold on the child's feet, and they didn't hold on her feet because the leather was so old and so rotten that it just fell all apart. And so her mother just wrapped her feet in bags and sent her out the door to walk 5 miles to school in Bosnia in the winter in fresh snow. And as she walked toward the school, she thought about her friends, and she decided she would go into the landmine field where the day before her best friend and one of her best friend had died stepping on a landmine, and another friend had lost his leg, and it had to be, you know, taken care of. Maybe if she walked through the same field, she could end her miserable life she had no reason to live. With no coat to keep her warm and no shoes. So she said she knew that within 2 years her parents would give her away for a marriage, because that was the tradition when you got to be an eighth grader. And she said to her parents, "Why is life so hard?" And her mother said, "Because we are sinners, this is our God's punishment for us. We must pray for the sins of Adam and Eve, and there is nothing we can do about it. We cannot hope for any good. If we work hard to do good things, we may find salvation." And so she's walking in this landmine at 12 to end her life. And she said, "I cried out, 'God, if you have mercy, could you forgive me for the terrible sin and show me your mercy?'" After 45 minutes of wandering around through the landmine, she cried out to God, "God, I hate you for hating me so much and wanting me to suffer like this. If you think I'm going to live like this, I'll show you." So she headed for Sniper's Alley, which was 100% for sure she would be killed. And pretty soon she finds she's walking through there and she's aiming for school. Nobody had shot her. And when she's getting to the school, a boy came out all excited and he said, "There's people in there giving out boxes." And she thought, "Why do I need a box? I have nothing to put in it." And so she said she came in through the door and this older man had a smile on his face. He handed her a box. She was surprised it was so heavy. She didn't think anything was in it. And she said she went to a corner and she sat in that corner and she was afraid to open the box. And finally she opened it up just a little bit. First of all, she said, "I looked down at my frozen feet and then with great apprehension lifted the lid. Inside was a pair of brand new sneakers. For the first time I sat and cried while lifting the lid and then closing it. The shoes fit perfectly." But she said there was more stuff in there. There was a 12-pack of pencils. My entire class of 58 students had been sharing a nub of one pencil all year long, and now I had my very own. A notebook was there to replace the one I used for 3 years. She said there wasn't even scribble room left in it. She said the erasers smelled like strawberries, she said, which was the first pleasant smell she could remember, because we'd grown accustomed to gunpowder and decaying bodies. Then she found a tube of toothpaste. She opened it and she tasted it and she said the flavor was so delicious that I nearly ate it all. She went home and her mother said, "Where did you get this?" And she told her mother a man at school had given this to her. And they had told her, of course, that this present was from Jesus. So she went with her new pencils and her new paper and she wrote a thank you to Jesus. And she took it to the man the next day at school and said, "Would you please take this back to America and give it to Jesus?" And the man told her the plan of salvation. And she accepted the Lord Jesus Christ. She went home. She told her parents about it. She said, "I knew God had answered my prayer. He did have mercy." And she said at first her parents thought that this would all pass. And it didn't. And so they started then to threaten her. And pretty soon there was punishment. And she said, "I didn't care," because she said, "I knew that this was more important." And she said, God blessed her. And she said, "He allowed me to come to America." And she said, "I have my own family, and we are privileged to package 1,500 boxes." That's her family that does that. "If only one person finds salvation through these boxes, my life will have been worthwhile. I am among the 100 million souls that have been touched by Operation Christmas Child and changed by the Jesus of heaven and earth who reached out to me." You have no idea what your box can do. Pray. That's the one thing Franklin said in his book. I like getting the boxes from the schools, from everybody else, but he said, I love getting them from Christians and from the church people, because he said they have prayed over the boxes.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the jobs that we did, and the PowerPoint started with food. It's going to end with food also. Carolyn, Marilyn, Danae, Hunter, and I took the van down, and we met Paul and Mary in Tulsa. And that's where the first slide was at, was our stop in Tulsa to get something to eat. We left right after noon on Thanksgiving. Friday morning, we took the van, all nine of us, and drove to a golf course that was there close to the airport. And we parked and rode a shuttle over to the warehouse. Those two dates you see up there from the 2 days before we got there. The first thing that happened when we got inside the warehouse was that we watched a video to show us the various jobs that we would be doing. So when we got back online, we each had a specific job. Marilyn and Mary were at the head of the line, and they took the cases of boxes that we had put together, like here at Hillcrest, and shipped to Crossway. Those are the cases that come to Dallas. They take the boxes out of those cases and take the money out. That's the first thing that happens. That money goes in a drop box. The next thing is the inspectors. You have to look in each box to see what's in there, because there's several things that cannot go in the boxes. Chocolate, crackers, liquids, that would include bubbles, fingernail polish, perfume, lotion, or anything that's camouflage cannot go in the boxes. When you take an item out of the box, you have to replace it. And there are bins in front of you that you can get things out of. And they had items like the VBS New Testaments, little dolls, Crocs, the shoes, different sizes, little stuffed animals. These were replacement items that you had put in the boxes. Sometimes when we were inspecting the box, we'd think, man, there's not much in here, and we'd add to it. Some boxes were so heavy you couldn't hardly hold them. They were really heavy. But some weren't, so we helped a little bit by putting some extra stuff in them. Then they would go to people who would wrap them with strapping tape for the last time before they were shipped out. And there were several of us that took turns doing that. And then after we taped the boxes, we gave them to Corey and Hunter, and I'll let Hunter tell you what they did with them from there. But Paul was a part of that with the boxing situation also. At the end, they had to be put back in cases and shipped out to go to the various places. All the boxes we worked on both days went to Peru. You can see from that slide that before we got there, earlier in the week, the boxes had gone to other countries, Guyana, Lithuania, and Latvia. But ours all went to Peru. The slide right there is a picture of the United States, and then they got a picture of Alaska. There's a pin in Alaska, and you were supposed to put what state you were from. So Danae's was the only one there. And she got recognized for that a couple of times, both days, because she had come so far to work on the shoe boxes. We worked from 9 to 3 each day. And there's a picture of Marilyn with her hammer that is a legal item to go. We worked from 9 to 3 with 30 minutes off for lunch. And we worked just as fast as we could. It was very tiring, especially on your back and on your feet. But at 3 o'clock both days, we did not want to quit. They had to make us quit, because we just kept going, because we needed to get those boxes shipped out. We had seen some people at the shuttle where you get on and off with some mats to stand on. So we realized that they had been there and done this before. We know what to do next time. We'll take a mat with us to stand on. This is waiting for the shuttle at the end of the day, outside the warehouse. At the end of the second day, Paul knew of a great place to eat. It's called Babe's. And we had a wonderful time there with good food and good fellowship with each other. While we were here, as Marilyn said, we learned a lot about the boxes, and especially that the younger children do not get as much. There might be 3 boxes for the 5 to 9-year-olds to each one of the 2 to 4-year-olds. They just didn't have as many. We found out that some people tape their boxes on the outside instead of putting rubber bands. And all that tape has to come off of there. So the instructions say to put rubber bands, and there's a reason for that. It really slows you down when you're trying to get these boxes shipped out. There were labels. There was a slide of one that said girl on it. On your envelope where you put your money, it had a girl label and a boy label. Some people put both labels on their box. So some people had not paid attention to that either. And they hadn't marked what age it was, so we had to decide what age the box was for. We got some really good ideas of things to put in the boxes. And I think maybe somebody will be talking about that later. If not tonight, definitely later on this year. We all had a great time doing this, and we hope that some of you will want to go next year and participate in this also. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say, but I really enjoyed going, and it was very, very much of an eye-opener. As Linda said, we really worked hard. Our youth that went just did a fantastic job along with everybody else. But I guess I've been involved in this since Hillcrest has been doing it, and for several years now. And just going to Dallas just opens your eyes even more so. We start at Christmas sales and kind of collect things all year round. But then when it comes November, then we're just kind of rushing to finish up. But I just want to say that reading the book, and I did buy the book too, just an eye-opener of where these shoeboxes go and to the different countries and the different children. And if you get a chance, some of us have the book, and if you want to read it, you're more than welcome to, but it's really an eye-opener. And I don't know, I learned a lot. I learned a lot that a lot of people do not pay attention to directions at all. we just found so many things that can't go, like liquids, and one shoebox had all these snack cakes in them. And of course, they were spoiled because we don't know where they're going. And so Danae had to take everything out of that box and find something else to put in it. And and then bubbles too. Oh, we found a lot of bubbles. And that would be really good around here, but of course liquids might spill or something. So no bubbles and definitely no snack cakes. But it's really a very interesting experience. We learned a lot. We learned what to do and what not to do. And again, I hope I get a chance to go again. And thank you, the church, for allowing us to go.
I stood next to Carolyn most of the time that we were working there, and I don't know how many times I said to her, "Do you think these people even read this thing?" Because there was so much that had to go. Although they do have an arrangement with orphanages and things in the towns where they do the processing centers, and anything that is appropriate to give to them. It does get passed on. It's not like it just gets thrown away or anything. Every morning that we were there, a little bit before 11 o'clock, someone would speak to us, and they would tell us about where we were packing boxes for and how many boxes were packed the day before and what was the total at that center so far. And the second day that we were there working, there was a young man who was there, and it turns out that he received a box himself when he was 14. He came from a Central Asian country. He didn't identify which country, but he did say that he spoke Russian. And he was raised in an orphanage most of his life. And earlier, he had been told, you know, he really needed to be Muslim, and so he had kind of followed that path for a while. But by the time he was 14, he had become a Christian. And he's there in the orphanage, and he said that they gathered them all together because they were going to distribute these shoeboxes. And so his friends are all excited, and they want a big box. And he wanted a little box. And they thought he was kind of crazy. But he said, if you have a big box, it will have something big in it like a pillow. And that wouldn't be very exciting, I guess. But if you got a little box, people wouldn't be able to pack one big thing in there. There would be a lot of little things, and he thought that would be great. Well, his best friend got a big box, and it did have a pillow in it. And he got a small box, and he said, oh, it had so many things in it. He was so excited that he had gotten this box, and he began looking through it, and he said that in the orphanage, they would get one pencil a semester for school. And he said there were so many pencils in his box, he thought surely he had enough pencils to last him all the way through college. And so he's very excited about that. And then they could get one piece of candy if they cleaned their entire room, like, you know, a little peppermint or something, you know, if they cleaned their whole room. And he said, I had so much candy in my box, I just really thought, you know, he thought he had it made with all the candy that was in there. And then there was a tube of Crest toothpaste. And he said they had toothpaste in the orphanage that he was in. It was just plain white. And he took the lid off of this toothpaste, and it had three different colors. And he thought that was pretty amazing. And he said their toothpaste didn't taste very good. And he tasted this toothpaste, and he said it was like a birthday party in his mouth. So he had a toothbrush too, and he went to go brush his teeth. He said, oh, it's just so amazing. And he brushed his teeth again, and he brushed his teeth again, and he finally just started eating the toothpaste. And he said he paid for it the next day because he was sick from that. But he said, oh, you Americans make the best toothpaste. But it was Crest, and his English was not very good, but he thought that it said Christ. So he's very excited that someone had sent him Christian toothpaste. And he kept telling people, you know, Christ, and they would say, Crest, Christ, Crest. And he didn't understand the difference between the two. But the point that he made from that was, you know, toothbrush, toothpaste, hard candy, pencils. You know, that doesn't sound like anything that's very exciting. I don't think any of my nieces and nephews would get really excited if they opened a Christmas present for me and it was a 12-pack of pencils. But that those little gifts that we put in there that to us, you know, are not very exciting or anything, that they mean a lot to these kids because they don't have things like that. And so it does make a big difference for them. He was going to college in Texas and doing some work with Samaritan's Purse, you know, and he was just talking about how, you know, lives can be changed by those, the simple gift that we put in those shoeboxes.
Well, I don't think I'm going to be talking as much as anyone else, but basically, what me and Corey's job was to do at the processing plant was we would take the shoe boxes and put it in the correct big old cardboard box that said boy 2 to 4 or girl 5 9. Put in the correct one, basically would have to take the box, pick it up, put it on the line, push it over. That was our job.
And you did it well.
Yeah, if you have ever worked for Samaritan's Purse, whether it was like at the Joplin Tornado or any kind of shoebox thing, they are very organized, and they have people working and in charge of everything, and they kept us on task, and everybody had a job to do, and the guys did well with that. Everybody's talking about, you get kind of addicted to this, and you get excited about it, and it's kind of like grandma shopping or something, or you have this, every time you see something, you're like, oh, you know, I ought to get that for Luke. Well, it's kind of like that. You go to, we've already started, several people I've heard have already started for next year. Bass Pro, oh my gosh, they've got those little flashlights on clearance. Okay, so we go buy some, you know. Or you see something on sale, or several times when we would go through the boxes, we'd show it, oh, look how cute this is, or whatever, and it'd give us ideas to put in boxes. And one of the ideas was these little dresses that are, some people call them pillowcase dresses or little African dresses. And so if you are into sewing, you could help out with that. Marilyn has a pattern, and then we also have a pattern that's a cardboard pattern. Ava's been looking at it too, and it's similar, and it's a simple little dress. And so if you're not a sewer, maybe you'd be excited about shopping for material or something, you know. And if we don't have, you know, if we get our shoeboxes full, so, you know, we do need fillers for other shoeboxes. Not that people's boxes are bad. It's just that when, you know, you go and they send them, you know, like they were saying, you have to take out things that people don't follow the directions on. But they do want to pack them full so when the kids open it up, you know, that they see that. However, you know, you don't also have to get so worried about it either that, you know, oh, that it's not the right stuff, because there's stories on pawn stories of testimony of how God takes that individual box and it goes to the exact right person. I know Corey told a story when we were sharing one day about what they told us. They said, you know, don't be worried about what's in there because God knows where it's going. And his story he told was about this little boy. He opened his shoe box and they delivered it, and all it had was socks. And they're like kind of embarrassed. They're like, well, we can take your box and we can kind of mix match it, you know, and we'll get you some pencils. And oh, no, he said, this is perfect. He said, I burned my feet and I have to change my socks every day, and this is just the right box for me. And so it's just always how God uses those boxes. It's not just about the pencils and the toys and the candy. It's about sharing Christ and changing lives. And one of my favorite things to do, my favorite stories, is that shoe story about the girl from Bosnia. And I have a new favorite. There's tons of those stories online and in books and things. But God threw this story in front of me at school one day, and while I was eating my lunch at school, I watched this, and this is a story I want to share with you guys. And it just shows you that it's not about just the toys. It's about changing lives. It's about people coming to Christ, and not just them, but their families. Not just changing their families, but it changes the village. It changes the town. And there's stories upon stories about that. And I just want to invite anybody and everybody, no matter how old you are or how young you are, although they do have a limit of 13. I think you have to be 13 to work there. But if you can't stand all day, there's a job for you. They have a room where you can sit down and you can sort out some of the things that people have donated to be fillers. So there are jobs for anybody and everybody. And someday, we do all have dreams of maybe someday delivering boxes. It is quite the process. We know friends from Springfield that have done that. They went to the Philippines and delivered boxes. And so maybe someday Some of us can do that. It is a process where you do have to do some training, and then you do have to have the connection. And what does help us have a connection to even go to the processing center was that we have been involved in it for many years, and then they asked us to be the relay center, and then that also gets us a connection to do this processing center stuff. So anybody can do that as well, and I do want to invite you to do that. And right now I'm going to show you that story about a man in Rwanda.
There are stories upon stories upon stories that God wants to tell of people who have experienced hardship, who have experienced pain, who have been used and abused. And God wants to take that story and turn it into something beautiful. He wants to take that story and turn it into victory.
The death toll has now risen to nearly 1 million dead in the small African nation of Rwanda.
It looked like the devil had taken control of hearts. The spirit of death was hovering over the whole land, even where a husband would kill a wife, where parents would kill children. There was no life. There was no life. Children were scattered, like Alex.
Militias who were hunting for the Tutsis in our neighborhood, they knew that my grandmother was a Tutsi and our whole family was a Tutsi, so they started. We were among the first people who were hunted down. These militias came to our house and they said, "All of you kids, go back inside the house." And we're looking through the window while they tortured our grandmother to death. It wasn't strangers that just killed our grandmother. It was our neighbors who we knew by name. And then my aunt started getting sick. She's about to pass away and didn't know who would take care of me and my brother. She went across the street to this orphanage called Gisimba Memorial Center. We were admitted in the orphanage. Then 3 months later, she also dies. Personally, I was really, really angry and searching for something. Then Operation Christmas Child came in our orphanage, and just having something that we could call our own, that we could play with, and that could take our minds off of what happened during the war. Receiving that shoebox was just the beginning of my faith. I started to understand that the world hasn't forgotten. It reminded us that, you know, someone out there cared for us. Minnesota. I love everything about Minnesota, but one thing, and that's the snow and the cold.
The Lord would figure out a way to do it.
He had prayed that the Lord would just give him one shot, and that there was this one opportunity for him to have to get out of Rwanda.
My mom, she is a testament to the love of Jesus Christ for following God's voice to be a mother to two orphans. My biological mom and my grandmother, wherever they are out there in heaven, they're, you know, applauding her for what she's doing.
I'm just so thankful that I'm his mom. Alex has a call in his life. I don't know what it will be. I just know it will be extraordinary.
Operation Christmas Child wanted to give me that opportunity to deliver shoeboxes in the orphanage, in the same orphanage that I grew up in, and the same orphanage that I received mine. when I received that gift, I got that message of hope, which continued to answer my questions of why I was alive. And I believe, without a doubt, that Operation Christmas Child can have a big part in bringing hope and love in the people of Rwanda.
Your seatbelt must be tightly fastened, ready for takeoff.
I have felt called to be back and to help in the process of forgiveness and reconciliation, because that's what the country is going for. If there's anything I can do, that's what I want to be back and help. Coming to understand that God loved me, and God loved not just me, but everybody, including those people who killed my family. Forgiveness frees the people who committed the crime by also them having peace and understanding that Christ can also forgive them. I'm trying to go to the prison to see if I can meet with the people who killed my family and to just share the message of forgiveness that I've gotten to have through Jesus Christ.
Father, pray that you continue to bless it, Lord, and just give him peace that he deserves. Thank you for your love and your kindness. I pray that your spirit may be with him and just protect him wherever he goes, Lord, that he may have the peace that comes through you, Lord.
We saw God. We saw God's love. And after Alex confessed it to him that he was forgiving him, because he has trusted in Christ, he has known a God who is forgiving. The act was so humbling, after which they hugged each other. Man, I cried. I worshipped God in my heart and said, we still have a God that can really transform hearts.
Someone may hear this story, and all they hear, all they think of is, oh, poor guy, he lost everything. I want people to have this reaction. That is a powerful God. The God who did that in my life, protecting me through the war, is the God who is working in their lives, is the God who is with them each and every day, the God who is using something as simple as a shoebox to change a kid's life. We're at my orphanage that I grew up in. I received a shoebox here. So now I'm back to deliver shoeboxes. That's probably one of the most exciting things I'm going to get a chance to do in my life. So I'm very excited.
He loves you and he cares for you, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. I can't wait to see them open the box. They're so excited. They're almost saying, hey, you should change that box with me. It's like, no, because the gift that they got already is destined for them. And God is going to use that box the way he wants to use it. God has already done his work. I got my box in 1995, when I was like this, just like you. Yeah.
Just see the smiles on their face, just the smiles that I got, that I had when I was very young. It's a blessing in itself. And it just reminds me how blessed I was when I received my box. We're not just handing out gifts and that's it, but we follow up with a discipleship program called The Greatest Journey.
Operation Christmas Child has continued to spread the gospel around the world using one simple box that carries a powerful message of Jesus Christ. You know, life is tough, but God is still faithful.
That was really good. My job, I was, because I was looking for the job that I thought I'd have to do the least lifting. And, you know, we had two healthy young men there to pick those boxes. I was the scanner. So if you put a barcode on yours, you paid online, and then you could track your box. We would scan it. I would scan it and then scan the box that I'd put it in, and they would download all that information sometime. I don't know when, but sometime. So if you do that in the future and you print your barcode as the scanner, I can tell you, make sure you have a good print cartridge in so it's nice and dark. And don't blow it up really, really big. Because you feel like the checker at Walmart. You spend all your time just trying to get it going. That there was some. It was a really good trip, and it really was everything. I've agreed with everything that's been said. It's addictive. You just want to do it. It changes the way you look at things. You know, we go into Walmart thinking, or the store, wherever we're at, what do I want? And it changes. Where you go and say, what can I get for somebody else? And I think that's a change God wants to do in us in a lot of ways. And one of the things I took away from this that I'm going to make sure it's in all the boxes I send are a pair of pliers. I wish Ben Fultz was here because he usually used to carry them all the time on his hip. People would put tools in. It's just, especially for the older boys, how many times, you know, just if you had a pair of pliers or you had a screwdriver or you had an adjustable wrench, and you can buy those really cheap and they go right in there. In places where they don't have that makes a big difference. And again, like has been said, we always view it through our eyes, what would we want, and it's so different. And they would tell stories of kids getting stuff and then taking it home to share with their entire family. And, you know, that's pretty amazing. One of the things, we got to meet with the volunteer coordinator, and she talked to us a little bit, and there's just some pretty powerful stuff. One is, they expect to deliver 10 million shoeboxes. You think about how many shoeboxes, that's a lot of shoeboxes. They're going to do 10 million shoeboxes this year. They're going to do around over 700,000 just at Dallas. And, if we had stayed, they probably would make it. I don't know. But anyway, they were bragging on us. We had two little table coaches, that people that were more professional, and they were really happy with us. And the big thing was, and, Hunter kind of downplayed it, you got to pack those boxes into that carton. You know, you can't just put a couple. You got to pack it. And if you didn't get enough in there, they'd send them back and say, you know, who thought this was full? And, not us. It must have been that other table. But anyway, they did a good job doing that. But she talked to us, and she talked. One of the things that we learned that we really didn't know, Samaritan's Purse has a once-in-a-lifetime limit on a shoebox. They do paperwork. They kind of try to keep track of where every shoebox goes and what kid gets it by name, and they will never get another one in their lifetime. And it sounds kind of harsh and kind of everything else, and then they explain this. There are 10 jelly beans in this jar, and each one of those jelly beans represents 1 million Samaritan's Purse shoeboxes that are processed this year. This jar has 363 jelly beans in it. And that represents the 363 million kids under the age of 14 in India. Just in India. And if you figured all the kids in the world under the age of 14, which is just under 2 billion, you'd have to have 12 more of these jars. And this is what gets sent out. And so you understand why they have the limit. And then the other thing is, didn't it make you want to do another shoebox? You know, you can do one every month. Bring it to church. We're talking about, we're going to find a place to put them. People do them early. But anyway, it really was amazing. What gets done. Every shoebox delivers, obviously, hope, joy, who doesn't like to get a present, and everything else. But also, every shoebox has the gospel message with it. And it's not just, you know, randomly given out. They organize it. They have usually either a half day or a several hour anyway event where they do this. And the gospel is presented. And it's not just presented and gone. They work with local churches, local pastors, and they do follow-up. They have a discipleship program to bring kids through. And it's like Awana. What happens when the kids come and the kids get saved? Well, then the parents start coming. And through the years of Operation Christmas Child and Samaritan's Purse, several thousand, over 100,000, maybe in the hundreds of thousands of people have been saved through the shoebox. So the simple gift. And our challenge, you know, we're a regional processing center or whatever we call ourselves, a collection point, a drop-off site, I'm not sure my terminology. But when you think about how many shoeboxes came through Hillcrest last year, which I think was a record, Brian, was it around 1,400? And I think that's the most we've ever done. Mary would know because Mary's kind of in, from the people in Springfield, they've kind of given her Laclede County to be the boss of, which she can handle that. But anyway, I'm going to get in trouble. You think of how many people live, how many people in all of Laclede County are in church on a given Sunday? Probably a lot more than 1,400, or who attend church regularly. How many more shoeboxes could we do just around here? And so it isn't the shoebox for the number's sake, and we can say, oh, wow, you know, Laclede County did 20,000 shoeboxes, which I think we should do. It's what each one of those shoeboxes represents when it leaves here and it goes to Peru or it goes to Africa or wherever God wants it to go. And we do, and we got to go to Springfield and listen to some of the people talk down there that have been and delivered, and without keeping you and everything else, there's just story after story after story of this shoebox getting in the right hands of somebody in circumstances that we would think, you know, it can't be coincidence. It just can't be. And God is behind it. And so it's a small thing for us to do, but it has a huge impact. And I know the whole team, our prayer is that, you know, eventually we start equaling this out a little bit. And it's a tremendous thing that gets done, but there's just so much more work to do.